Hi everyone, my name is Effie and it's April 15th today on a Sunday afternoon in New York City. And I've kind of spent the weekend pretty much all by myself, to myself, just getting back in touch with who I am. I'd like to start this podcast, which will be about narcissistic abuse recovery. It is something that I'm quite familiar with, as I've had to go through this process not once but twice in the last 3 years, following two very abusive, toxic relationships. The first one with an overt narcissist, and the second one with a covert, vulnerable narcissist. And as we go through this together, we'll come to learn more about these terms. But for now, just keeping it very general and testing this out, sort of a personal experiment, my very first podcast episode. So it's kind of special. I don't know what it's going to sound like. I don't know if anybody's going to listen to it. But it's part of the journey. And so for whoever decides to join me on this journey, welcome. I've written a number of articles that I've self-published on Medium. And I'd like to start this episode with reading something that I wrote early on in my recent recovery. Just to give you a little bit of background, some context. Back in December, about a week before Christmas, less than a month before my birthday in January, I was discarded, abandoned by a very toxic individual that I had shared my life with, my heart with, for an entire year. It started off a year prior when I was 6 months out of the first toxic relationship with a narcissist. And I had finally thought I had reached a point where I was in touch with myself. Unfortunately, I ran into a person that was sort of in the periphery of my life for a number of years. We didn't really know each other, but there was a familiarity, and I'll explain. It was as if fate was bringing us together, or at least it felt like fate, and it added to my letting my guard down. A number of years back, I had seen this individual. We had made eye contact at a film screening. He was involved in film at the time, and we had mutual friends. And through friends of friends after the event, although we never formally met, we found each other and added each other as Facebook friends. Fast forward years later, when Instagram came around, and it gives you a list of contacts and friends of friends from Facebook, he followed me, I followed him back, and over the course of a number of years, we got to know each other through our posts, respective posts, and likes. So there was a sense that we had known each other, and a sort of life bringing us, the universe conspiring to bring us together. Also, we shared a the same cultural background. We were both first generation Greek Americans. And again, having mutual friends, everything started feeling like it was just perfect. It was, again, the stars aligning. Unfortunately, this person ultimately turned out to be extremely selfish. Delusions of grandeur that I had no idea about in the beginning. In the beginning, he was the perfect boyfriend. For months, bathing me in his attention, his undivided attention, putting me up on a pedestal, saying he never loved anyone the way he loved me, that it felt like he knew me forever. I knew that it was, something was off about that, and I remember commenting to him about it early on, that it just, considering our age, we're both close to 40, that it wasn't something that felt genuine. I mean, yes, in the moment you can be, you know, enamored by a person, you can be excited, you can start to really like somebody, you can even experience some feelings of love, but to say I've never felt this kind of love before at our age just seemed a bit off. And I also remembered that the first narcissist had used similar language the first time we actually slept together, and I got really worried, and I remember broaching the subject with him, with the second one, and you know, his reassurance to me was that, yeah, it sounds similar, but this is different. This is different. I took my time. I didn't get into a relationship. I haven't been in a relationship in 8 years. I dated on and off, and nobody was right for me. I finally know what I want, and it's you. And I thought, well, okay, you don't know me fully yet, but perhaps you're seeing things that I fail to see in myself, who knows? And honestly, after everything that I had gone through, after feeling so low about myself for so long following the first abusive relationship that I was in, this sounded like a breath of fresh air, and I wanted so bad to believe this man. He seemed so earnest and so eager at the time, and little by little, I let my guard down, and before long, I was hooked. 3 months into it, I was totally hooked, and that's when I started seeing little snippets of inconsistent behavior in comparison with what he was saying. His attention was certainly not on me as much anymore. The romantic gestures were starting to fade into the past. I noticed a selfish part. He was also playing the parent-teacher role with me. He'd start to provoke these little arguments about politics and picking on my, whether it be my spiritual beliefs or non-beliefs, my my fears, my worldview, questioning me constantly, putting me on the defensive to justify my choices and my beliefs. And that started to irritate me. And I'm not one to hold back when I feel slighted or irritated or put on the spot. So I put up a good fight, to be honest. I didn't just take it. And that's when the problems began. And slowly, gradually, the distancing, the silent treatments, days without hearing from him, the gaslighting, for instance, when I confronted him about not being in regular contact with me during the week, he would blame shift and make it about me and my lack of communication. Why don't you initiate contact? Every time I tried to raise an issue, it became my fault somehow, or the subject got changed, or I got stonewalled, which means that effectively shut down the conversation and the subject matter. Passive-aggressive behavior afterwards, again, not hearing from him for days, showing up late to events that we were going to or when he would meet me. I used to have these, curate these literary salons, collaborating with other poets and writers and artists, and I tried to make him a part of that. And in the beginning, he seemed quite supportive, and ultimately, as time went on and I was getting more traction with these salons and more people coming, and I was doing something extremely creative and beneficial for myself that made me feel alive, I noticed he would do things to sabotage it, or to make me feel less than, but it wasn't something that I could show people proof of. It was something that I knew inside of me was wrong. Like, for instance, I would hold these events at a hotel event space where there was a adjacent bar behind the glass doors, and he would invite and assemble his friends and gather them at the bar while my event was going on, and I was nervous and I was trying to get things, kind of keep things together. And not once did he think of bringing me a glass of water or checking in to see if I was good. Not once did he really sit through the whole thing. It was his opportunity to mix and mingle with his friends and to take credit for the work that I was doing. So I started noticing all of this. And then, of course, when I would raise these issues, it became a huge issue, and it became about me and what I was doing and how I was the one who was at fault somehow. How dare I question him? How dare I make him feel bad? Why was I picking on him? Why are you telling me all the things that you're telling me? And I haven't even touched on half of what was going on. There was also the part where, as time went on, I noticed this pattern of constantly screen grabbing very attractive and sensual looking women on Instagram, a lot of models that he and actresses that he whose accounts he was following, and in front of me he would sit there and I would watch him actually screen grab and save photos of things that would come up on his feed, sometimes even showing them to me. I could sense like that there was this thing where he was getting a sixth sense of gratification out of showing me this and then watching to see if there was going to be a reaction. And I tried to contain myself as much as possible and not show how uncomfortable that made me feel or how odd I thought it was, until one day when I noticed this as a pattern and I brought it to his attention. His response was that you're jealous, you have insecurities, I'm an artist, I'm a visual artist at heart, and this is part of my inspiration, and I don't just screen grab pictures of naked women or sensual poses. I screen grab a lot of different images, and I'm like, yes, but this bothers me, and it's still pervasive enough, and it's on a regular basis, and oftentimes you do it in front of my face, and well, that's because I'm transparent and I have nothing to hide. And I remember saying to him, well, how about my feelings? How about the fact that I end up feeling less than? And he's like, well, you shouldn't feel that way. And my response to that was that please do not invalidate my feelings. They matter. Your feelings matter, but I matter more. And I remember taking that in and going, wow, this man is not here to love me, to make me feel safe, to make me feel protected. He just invalidated my experience, my feelings, and on top of that, accused me for being jealous, which became a thing from that point forward. Every chance he got from that point forward until he finally discarded me in the most cruel way right before the holidays, in a very, very painful way, and then disappeared from my life. I was the crazy one, I was the jealous one. And when I would call his attention to things that he would do to cause certain reactions, he would gaslight me. And what that pretty much means is he would contradict himself. He would pretty much tell me that my right was not right, it was left. And I started believing it. I started actually doubting myself to the point where I didn't know who I was anymore, what I believed in, what I wanted. And then I became hypervigilant as a result to please him. I remember thinking to myself, I'm just going to be his sounding board from now on. I'm just going to listen to him. I'm going to just be there to support him no matter what. I'm not going to say a word, whether I see these pictures or whether he says a horrible thing, whether he makes me feel small. The poor thing's going through a lot. He had issues. He was in the middle of kind of this startup situation, a pharmaceutical startup, and he was trying to raise money and get investment to keep it going. The funds hadn't come in. He could find nobody to finance this project, and his and his business partners' funds were dwindling to the point where he had no money to do anything with me. And instead of going to find gainful employment to get at least to carry him through this time until something came through, he just carried on as the victim, as and when I tried to point something out, I was the issue. I didn't understand the woe is him. How could you not support me? How could you not understand me? How could you? And so I got to a point where I said, okay, fine, I'm going to be this man's sounding board because I've put in so much by now. I do truly love him. Even though he abuses me, even though he neglects me, even though my feelings don't matter, even though my projects don't matter as much as his, and he made that perfectly crystal clear through his actions towards me, I'm going to be there. Well, in some way, thankfully, now I can be with clarity and being 4 months out of it and being no contact, I can say that it was probably the best thing that happened was the fact that he did leave because I was trauma bonded from the intermittent love that he showed, or alleged love, gestures, alternating between that and the abusive behavior. I was chemically bonded to him. So anyway, that is the summary of my situation. How did I heal? Well, I'm still healing. And part of starting this experimental podcast is this journey of healing and self-care. And one of the first articles that I wrote and self-published on Medium was, I'm going to pull it up here. Let's see. It was on how to heal. The first three steps after narcissistic abuse. And this was written and published on February 12th. So it was about a little over a month after he had left my life. And I write, "It may feel like this hellish pain will go on forever, and that you have lost all sense of self and of hope in life. I am writing this primarily as a genuine effort through my own past and recent experience healing from this kind of insidiously damaging abuse to reassure you that you can and will get through this. It will not feel easy at times, and you may even find yourself regressing to past thought processes and behaviors. But as long as you are kind to yourself, even in those difficult moments, while making a conscious choice to keep moving ahead despite the setbacks, you will not only heal, but wake up one beautiful day and find that you are in fact thriving like never before. So here are some tips I've gathered through my own personal experience recovering from this type of abuse, through other survivors' stories, and from taking in expert blogs on the subject matter, as well as suggestions from narcissistic recovery abuse therapists. 1. Disconnect from the abuser and any reminders. It is crucial to your healing that you disconnect not only from your abuser, but any reminders or remnants of him or her. Although my abuser discarded me, he extended the altruistic friend guru card. Thankfully, I immediately realized that this would only reaffirm his sense of superiority and specialness while leaving me in a perpetual state of self-doubt, groveling at his feet and waiting around for his crumbs. It would mean not only a continuation of the abuse cycle, but also a loss of my dignity. Even in the haze immediately following the awful discard, a small part of me was able to see through the fog and detect his attempt at manipulation. I made a conscious choice to disconnect and go no contact. The key to successfully enforcing no contact is to be clear with yourself as to why you are doing this. It's for your own sanity, and so that you can gain clarity in the face of all the confusion, doubt, and cognitive dissonance. Going no contact is solely meant for you, as a means to jumpstart your healing process. This should not be done as any kind of effort, however tempting, to get back at him or her, or to make him or her miss you and want a relationship with you again. A true narcissist, whether somatic or cerebral, overt or covert, will not suddenly wake up one morning, realize that he or she is disordered, has been abusing you, and desire to make amends. If he or she does reach out to you, what's known as hoovering, know that this is solely done for his or her own ego. Everything a narcissistic individual does is centered around bolstering him or herself through obtaining narcissistic supply with little to no regard of the negative impact on the other person. It is equally important to disconnect from any reminders, remnants, or triggers associated with the abuser. This means that you must block, or if you find this too difficult to do, at the very least, unfollow the abuser and common friends on all social media. If you find yourself checking his or her page or posts, believe me, I've faltered on this one as well. Then take note of how this makes you feel. Usually absolutely terrible. Forgive yourself for doing this and start over. You will begin to observe over time that the less you know about the abuser, whether by checking his or her social media or staying in touch with mutual friends, the more focused you are and better you feel about yourself. You'll discover that you actually prefer being in this more serene state and naturally choose to steer clear of any reminders or triggers. 2. Tell and write your own truth. In your research of narcissism and narcissistic abuse recovery, you may have come across the term cognitive dissonance. What this means is being in a state of perpetual confusion as to what you experienced when you were with the abuser and what truly happened to you. Assuming, of course, that you are now in the no-contact stage. Narcissists rely on tactics they've used time and time again within the context of their interpersonal relationships. Such tactics include cycles of intense focus on the partner, known as love bombing, followed by a period of devaluation, where they begin to blame shift, ignore, and minimize you and your accomplishments. As they prepare for your final discard, the painful breakup, this creates a kind of dissonance in the mind of the narcissist's partner. Oftentimes, while you were still in the relationship, you may have found yourself distraught trying to make sense of this dissonance between who you initially thought your abuser was and who they became as the relationship progressed. This dissonance is still very much present post-discard and is one of the major reasons why it feels so excruciatingly difficult to break free from ruminating and obsessing, as well as constantly doubting your own experience of what transpired. You may even find that you've accepted the blame and guilt that the abuser shifted onto you, thereby believing that the relationship ended because of something you did or did not do. This is a direct result of the manipulation and brainwashing sustained at the hands of the narcissist. The narcissist will do this over and over again in every relationship because he or she has on some visceral level realized that it does in fact work. The more their partner begins to doubt themselves and their experience, the less likely the partner will come to a realization and decide to leave the abusive relationship. Narcissists are inherently afraid of abandonment and will do whatever it takes to ensure that they will never be found out and abandoned. So what can you do whenever this doubt as to who the narcissist truly is and what you experience while in the relationship comes up? It is crucial to tell your truth, to tell your story as long as necessary and as often as this cognitive dissonance arises within you. Make sure that you are going to a friend or qualified therapist who understands the nature of narcissistic abuse and recovery, who listens to you without judgment, and who can validate your experience. Additionally, start journaling. Journaling is extremely therapeutic in that you get to immediately externalize your emotions and obtain the necessary validation as you read back what you've written. You may also choose to start a blog if you feel comfortable sharing your experience and healing process, or even a podcast like I'm doing now. The point is to find a healthy way to externalize your emotions, release the trauma held in your body, and validate your experience. The more you do this, the less doubt and cognitive dissonance you will experience. 3. Engage in extreme self-care and mindfulness. When we come out of an abusive relationship, we usually find ourselves feeling empty and lost. While in the relationship with the narcissist, we were managed down and became hyper-vigilant in our efforts to please him or her and avoid abandonment. It's natural to feel at a loss now that the relationship is over. I personally experienced a deafening silence, a painful void, and an intense loneliness post-discard. Please know that this too shall pass. Sometimes, especially in the first days or weeks following the traumatic break, you will find that your only solace is retreating into a cocoon under a blanket and crying it all out. After all, we are going through a terrible withdrawal, while grieving the loss of not only a relationship, which would normally be this normal sense of loss after a breakup, but also the fantasy of who we thought that person was. It's crucial, however, that over time we make more conscious choices to engage in self-care. For me, taking a hot shower, going to the gym, and signing up for fiction writing workshops became my way out of the initial devastation and sense of severe loss. Whatever it is that you enjoy that brings the focus back to you, go for it. Light that scented candle, take that long bath, go for a leisurely stroll in the park, buy that dress that makes you look and feel fabulous again. Begin to accept invites to friends' gatherings and relearn to find pleasure in socializing again. This will all take time. There may be moments where you want to run back to your cocoon. And please know that that is perfectly fine, as long as you no longer stay there for prolonged periods of time. That said, if you sense that you're sinking into a depression, cannot find any pleasure in activities you once enjoyed, and or find that you are avoiding social interaction, please seek immediate help from a certified therapist and also inquire about medication to help you through this difficult time. As you learn to re-engage in activities that you find enjoyable and pleasurable, your mind may still try to trick you into ruminating over the narcissist again. Remember, what you sustained was abuse, and it's not easy to break free from the trauma bond. So there will be moments where you feel sad or spend a lot of time remembering or even experiencing pangs of nostalgia for the good moments. Once you're far away to snap out of this is to bring your focus back to what you're doing in the moment. We call this mindfulness, to become aware of the moment. If you are drinking a cup of coffee, observe the way the cup feels in your hands or the aroma as you take that sip. If you're writing something, notice the color of your pen and the movement of your hand on the page. Always observe and be present. These are the most fundamental steps on your journey of recovering from narcissistic abuse. As I go through my own healing journey, I'll be offering additional suggestions. But for now, these are the first steps that will get you started on the right path, one which will no doubt bring you back to your beautiful self, the one that was always there, but got obscured by the ultimate soul vampire, a highly disordered person. In time, you will not only heal, but thrive. The narcissist will always stay the same and go through his or her awful cycle of abuse in every relationship. That is his or her karma. That is the narcissist's certain self-inflicted punishment. That is your justice, your vindication, knowing that. The narcissist will forever be stuck needing supply to validate the false self he or she has created since childhood. You no longer need to dwell on that. It's enough that you are beginning to realize that you have escaped this hellish nightmare, and your life will be filled with genuine, reciprocal love and joy going forward. Remember, you are a beautiful soul. You will make it through this, and you will thrive. So that was the very first story or article that I published related to my recovery experience. And it started off, I wanted to actually take it a little bit away from me because I wasn't ready yet to dig that deep or to keep the focus on me, I should say, rather, and to expose myself and my experience publicly. So I tried to deflect it away from myself and basically providing guidance to others as to how to get through, as I sort of crystallized the experience, and the steps that needed to be taken to get out of that initial horrific post-discard or break experience. Because that's the most painful. The first month or two is extremely painful, and it really does feel like one is withdrawing from a serious drug. They often compare it to a heroin withdrawal process. Very excruciating. It feels like your insides are being ripped out, and it's extremely isolating, extremely painful, and in that sense, isolating, because you are going through it in that moment in time on your own. And no matter how many friends, validating friends or family you talk to about this, which of course it's important that you do that, of course only seeking out individuals who will understand and validate, that's very important. It's still, at the end of the day, you still go back into yourself and in that very painful place. And the only person who can really, really bring you out of it is your own self. So taking those first three steps that I highlighted in that article is the way to do that, is the way to jolt yourself out of a horrific withdrawal situation into a place where you can begin to truly heal and find yourself again. Because really, when we're in these kinds of toxic relationships, we do lose parts of ourselves. I mean, our essence is still there. And that, at the end of the day, is when you tap into that essence that will help incredibly. Because as long as you can still retain that little bit of yourself that was always there, then you can start building up on that again, building from there, building yourself up and taking yourself out of this horrible situation. And this is why it is so critical to get as far away from the toxic abuser, from the narcissist. You cannot maintain contact and be able to gain this kind of clarity and this willingness to just bring the focus all back to you and find ways to heal. As long as you are in some even minimal contact with the toxic individual, you will be caught up in it and you will still be in a place where you are trauma bonded and you're not truly withdrawing and healing. You've got to go through that painful. It's like ripping yourself apart, but you got to do that to build yourself up again. It's the only way. So we don't do that to get back at the person. We don't do that for the other, to either punish or in the hope that somehow they will turn over a new leaf and come back begging you to take them back. No, because you see a disordered person who has this kind of personality disorder, this is not something that can change overnight, if ever. In most cases, they never change. It is an illness. It is ingrained within their personality, and it's very difficult to change without years of therapy and the willingness to put in the work. And part of the disorder is never acknowledging, that person never acknowledges that they are wrong. And that's part of the disorder. they will always blame shift. It will always be, the other person is at fault and they're the victim. They're the victim of everyone. They're the victim of circumstances. They're the victim of life. They play that role well because it's worked for them, because people forgive them when they're portrayed as the victim, because they can hide behind that, and their family and friends and enablers will excuse the bad behavior or overlook it or actually believe their version of the story each and every time, no matter how many times they go through the cycle, no matter how many times they get into relationships and then the relationships fall apart. Their friends and family are going to, they've drank the Kool-Aid. And the people who have, who haven't, like just, they don't want to get trapped in the drama and arguments. So if their family, of course, they're not going to say anything, right? They're not going to alienate their family member. They're not going to say a word. And others will just go away quietly. So don't seek that validation from the abuser. You'll never get it. Don't seek that validation from their family members, from their friends. However nice those family members and friends were to you, at the end of the day, unfortunately, they will stay loyal to the abuser narcissist. And they will, in all likelihood, have believed, just like you did at some point when you didn't know any better, his version. So, or her, for that matter. So don't go to the wrong places for validation where you know you'll never get it. This is why I also say tell your story as often as you need to those people that are close to you, that understand, don't judge, and validate you. If you sense any resistance or any, because I've had those where I turned to some people, even family, and they were like, why aren't you over it already? He was a jerk anyway. He's, like you said, he was a narcissist. He was this and that. So you should be over it. You should be thankful. Okay, that is something that you should not be taking in. Immediately remove yourself if you can. If you can't, just stop talking. Just say, please, I would rather not talk about this right now. And start creating boundaries. Because that will be harmful. That will reinforce the experience that you went through while you were in that toxic relationship, because that was exactly what was going on in it, where the narcissist was pretty much dismissing your feelings and your reality. And so you began to doubt it. That's exactly what happened to me. So the last piece of advice before I close for the day is tell your story as often as you need to, but only to those people who have proven to you that they will listen to you without judgment and will validate you and your experience. Very important. It's very important in my healing, and it continues to be. So I want to thank whoever my new listeners are. Thank you for, if you've gotten this far in this, then that means that you found something of value and something that resonated with you, and I hope that you can take that in and it could be of some use to you in your recovery. Or if you are listening as a friend or family member of someone who's going through this, then maybe you can share some of that information and guidance with them. Remember, we are beautiful souls. We are empathic souls. What happened was unfortunate, but as with anything in life, it is definitely a learning experience. And if we could take something like that, that's so felt so soul shattering, and find the silver lining and turn this around for ourselves and thrive, I think that there's no limit. There's no limit to where we can go, how far we can go as empathic human beings from here. And after having gone through an experience like that, and now we're better able to recognize the red flags, we will no longer allow ourselves to get caught up in anything of this sort. So again, thank you. Good night.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.